This morning's reading is from Daniel chapter 6, verses 1 to 28, and may be found on page 890 of the church Bibles, which stewards are now bringing round. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three chief ministers over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the chief ministers and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the chief ministers and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So these chief ministers and satraps went as a group to the king and said, "May King Darius live forever. The royal ministers, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days, except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, your majesty, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." So King Darius put the decree in writing. Now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. "Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or human being except to you, your majesty, would be thrown into the lion's den?" And the king answered, "The decree stands in accordance with the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed." Then they said to the king, "Well, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day." When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sunset to save him. Then the men went as a group to King Darius and said to him, "Remember, your majesty, that according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed." So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" And Daniel answered, "May the king live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty." The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then King Darius wrote to all the nations and peoples of every language in all the earth, "May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God. He endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions." So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Morning, everyone. It's great to be with you. What were you doing 25 years ago? Some of you may not remember. You may be too young. It was one of my first memories of clashing with the grown-up world and not really understanding humanity. It's the 25th anniversary of the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait this year. It was at 2 o'clock in the morning on the 2nd of August 1990 that the world watched with bated breath as our screens were filled with pictures of burning oil fields going up into clouds of smoke. The hostility was fierce, and it took just 2 days for the Kuwaiti authorities to be overrun. It took a few more days for Iraq to declare that Kuwait was now its own 19th province and had lost its autonomy. The violent takeover was complete. The human cost was colossal, and the cost of that decision to invade goes on being paid today. I tell this story this morning for two reasons. The first, and this bears repeating many, many times, is that when we hear this story and other stories like it, stories of national pride and anger and outrage and revenge bubbling over into armed conflict, stories of death and treachery, of tactical devastation, when we hear stories of war on Remembrance Day or any other day of the year, we must ensure that we remain shockable. That such an enormous amount of damage and loss of life that took place in that short week in Kuwait, which has taken place throughout history and which sadly continues today in many, many places around the world, including still Iraq and, as we know, of course, Syria, it's an outrage. That humanity, or at least parts of it, consider it acceptable to kill, maim, torture, and oppress their fellow human beings is wrong on every single level. And it should and must still touch us and affect us. For if we lose our soft hearts, how can we ever hope to work towards peace? Who are we to become immune to the suffering we see on our television screens and in the media when God's heart still weeps for every single precious human who is damaged and for every life that is obliterated, every single one of them made with care and with love in his own image? The reason we remember year after year on Remembrance Day is never to glorify or to promote war. It's to give thanks to God that we enjoy sustained peace in this country and to keep our hearts soft. We're called continually to bring to mind the cost of armed warfare, to recall the horror of its effects, to strive to make sure that at worst, armed engagement is absolutely the last resort, and at best, that it's banished from the face of the earth. That seems an outrageously ambitious objective, but God is able. The second reason for telling the Kuwait story this morning in particular is to lend some perspective as we take up our place in Daniel's story, as we've been doing these last few weeks. We follow Daniel from the beginning as he's forcibly removed from his own country to serve in the courts of the kings of Babylon, a prisoner of war. The story of Daniel opens as he becomes a victim of armed conflict. At the hands of a tyrant king, Daniel places himself firmly at God's mercy and several times over is delivered from deadly situations. That in itself is astonishing. But here's the thing as we come to our point today. At the end of the chapter 5, which we were looking at last week, we see the end of the dynasty of Babylon, the end of Nebuchadnezzar and his family. And if you were here last week, you'll have heard Alison speaking about Belshazzar's feast, where there's some unexpected graffiti that happens on the wall by a disembodied hand, and Belshazzar's reign comes to an abrupt end. Although we can't be certain of the history, it does at least appear that Belshazzar is assassinated by soldiers of the Persian Empire, and Darius becomes the new ruler, a speedy and violent takeover by a new regime, much as happened in the Iraq-Kuwaiti war. So as we join Daniel this morning at the beginning of chapter 6, it's nothing short of a miracle that he is even alive. What is truly astonishing is not only is he alive, he's second in command over the whole country. In verse 1, we hear, "It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with 3 administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel." Can you even imagine for a moment that Saddam Hussein's regime, as they took over Kuwait, would employ the existing prime minister to run the country? It's unthinkable. Daniel has once again survived a deadly situation and has come out on top. God's been faithful to him, and he remains faithful to God. But of course, it means that Daniel is the new boy. It's most likely that Darius has brought many of his own advisors, his satraps and his administrators, to oversee this new regime from wherever he was working and governing and maybe being a soldier before. Daniel is not one of them. Once again, he is an outsider. His work and his reputation in the Babylonian court mean nothing now. He has to start all over again, no trading on past glories. And even though Daniel by now is in quite significant old age, we read in verse 3 that Daniel so distinguished himself amongst the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Anyone who is retired, take note. Once again, God calls Daniel to do something difficult, and Daniel steps up and obeys. But we know, of course, that while Darius held Daniel in high esteem, Daniel's other colleagues, of course, do not. Quite the opposite, in fact. And in a plot worthy of Shakespeare and John Grisham combined, the shunned and jealous colleagues manipulate circumstances to put Daniel in, if you'll excuse the pun, a hairy situation. Daniel refuses to let his faithfulness to God be interrupted by a royal edict demanding loyalty to the king. And even though, as we see in the story, Darius is reluctant to carry out the penalty, in the end, Daniel's faithfulness wins him a night-long ordeal in a pit filled with hungry lions. Now, if you've been around churches for a while, you may have well read this story before, and perhaps even as a child. We know the outcome so well. God saves Daniel by sending his angel to protect him. It's an amazing miracle. I was watching another Daniel last night, Daniel Craig, at the cinema. Not quite the same thing. But I thought, as I finished watching the new James Bond movie, and there is going to be a spoiler, but it's not too much of a spoiler, that if I had come in and they'd set the scene, and then within 10 minutes had said, oh, it's all right, James Bond comes away and he survives, that wouldn't have made much of a story. And yet with stories like this, we can go, can't we, from the setting the scene to the conclusion, it's all right, God sends an angel to keep the mouths of the lions closed, and miss the drama and the plot development and the lessons that we can learn and the encouragement we can take from what happens in between. I would have asked for my money back at the cinema if there'd been nothing in between the beginning and the end of the story. And so this morning I would like us to pause, freeze frame if you like, and stand with Daniel at the side of the pit of lions. Time after time, this faithful man of God has been obedient. He's had everything stripped away from him. And again, he is asked to do something very difficult because of his faith in God. I wonder if you've ever been asked by God to do something difficult. Perhaps like Daniel, you would consider that you have had a lifetime of difficult things. Is God calling you to do something difficult now? You see, in a church so filled with faithful Christians as this one is, which warms my heart and makes me so excited for our life together, the fact is that there will likely be several, if not more, people grappling at any one time with God's call on their life. You see, God needs Daniels just as much today as he ever did in the past. Faithful men and women and children who will step up in difficult times and declare in the face of opposition that God is God and has rule and reign over all of creation. Faithful men and women and children who will not give up on their faith in the face of adversity or challenge. And if we are a church worth our salt, and I believe we have the potential very much to be so, then some of those faithful men, women, and children will come from within our doors and they will be here this morning. God calls his followers in every generation to persist in faithfulness in spite of opposition and threat. And here's the thing. If that's you this morning, if you're wondering whether to step out in faith, I really wish I could stand here and promise you without question that God will send an angel and stop the jaws of the lion that is threatening you. I wish I could say that was the absolute certain outcome, that stepping up is always pain-free, that it always turns out well, that Daniel's story is a blueprint, and that the baddies always lose. We only need to look to our brothers and sisters in the persecuted church around the world to know that this is not the case. Sometimes it seems to us, at least in the short term, that the lions win. And that can be confusing, and it can be frightening. And I can't make those promises to you, and nobody can. But what I can do, and what I do, is urge each one of us to let this story of Daniel give us hope and strength. Let Daniel's example lead us into a regular and disciplined and intimate pattern of prayer. Let's let it galvanize our resolve to trust God in every circumstance. If it's the natural world that threatens you, that natural world comes under God's rule and reign. He is in control. He is the creator. Even the natural instincts of powerful lions come under his authority. If it's political regimes that threaten you, whether a national regime or simply office politics or a family discord, those too come under God's rule and reign. He is in control. Ultimately, we read that every knee shall bow and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. God doesn't always do the miracle we yearn for, but he is capable in every situation, and he is in charge in every situation, and we can trust him. I can and do urge you to look to Daniel's confidence in God, to his unswerving faith, and to let it encourage you. And you know, we have an even stronger reason than Daniel to have faith. Because, of course, since the time of Daniel, the hope of the world has come in person. The coming of the Messiah is no longer a future hope for a one day as it was for Daniel. Jesus has come and he has defeated death. This man prays at an empty cross because Jesus is risen. And I think it's interesting to note that Jesus himself faced the same threat as Daniel at the side of the lion's den. They were both sentenced on false charges. They were both arrested when they were at private prayer. And just as Daniel emerges from a pit of lions, and even more miraculous, Jesus emerges from a tomb 3 days after his crucifixion. It is this power and this hope that allows us to risk all for our faith. Is God calling you to do something difficult? And just briefly, as I was preparing, there was just one other small part of this story that I wanted to pick up on. And that's the issue of jealousy. The brutal and manipulative actions of Daniel's colleagues, the satraps, and the other administrators were driven by a burning jealousy, a case of green-eyed monsters. Jealousy for attention, jealousy for recognition, jealousy for status, and perhaps by feelings of rejection. Jealousy is a powerful and dangerous beast, and it can cause all kinds of damage. And if you are in a situation where you feel jealous, perhaps someone's been promoted and you haven't, perhaps someone has something that you feel should have been yours, whatever it is, can I encourage you this morning to bring that sense of injustice, that sense of jealousy before God, before it bubbles over into something unpleasant and before it damages you or another person? Bring the whole situation before God, because you too are called to trust him in this. Trust that his justice and his perfect timing will prevail, because otherwise jealousy can wreak havoc. In this chapter of Daniel, there are some difficult verses at the end, because in the end, the outcome was a tragedy for those who had falsely accused Daniel. Now, I need to say here that I believe in a forgiving God, and I don't think the forgiving God that I believe in would have wanted the manipulative administrators and their families destroyed in such an awful way as we read at the end of the chapter, as they themselves face the hungry lions. That outcome, I believe, is a result of jealous and flawed human motives. But, however we look at it, it was the outcome in a situation that was fueled by jealous anger. So let's resolve not to allow jealousy to control our motives or our actions. And my sense is God will honor us in that resolve. Is God calling you to do something difficult? Will you allow yourself to be encouraged by Daniel's story this morning? Are you facing something where you are jealous? We have a living, grace-filled, loving God who longs to hear from you and for you to bring that and trust him with it.